Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have a great show in store for you today. So let me begin by saying hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South Americas. Jimmy and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap today. Today, we're going to look at what happened to Trayvon Martin. Why was he screaming for help? Also, we take a look at a 14-year-old's. Is that too young for life in prison? We explore presidential politics and much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air, and I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Okay, before we get started, I'd like to say hello to the good fellows down at Unique Techniques Barbershop, and a special thank to Bo. Also, Smoking Chris Barbecue and Catering. I had a good time with the fellas and wanted to let them know how much I enjoy spending time with them. Also, a special shout out to George Spencer and her music. She does a wonderful job blowing that saxophone. I encourage you all to get out there and check her out. And lastly, let me say thanks to Maine Headlines 55. You can check out his blog at mainlineheadlines.blogspot.com. He and I, we currently get out there on Twitter, and we kind of go back and forth on the current event. So a big shout out to Maine Headlines 55. So first up, let's take a look at Trayvon Martin. Now, in case you haven't heard this, I want you to check out Charles M. Blow's. He wrote an article, an op-ed, in the New York Times titled "The Curious Case of Trayvon Martin." Now, it gives a firsthand account of the matters as relived by the mother, Sabrina Fulton. And here's what the article says. Trayvon had left the house he and his father were visiting to walk to the local 7-Eleven. On his way back, he caught the attention of George Zimmerman, a 28-year-old neighborhood watch captain who was in a sports utility vehicle. Now, Zimmerman called the police because the boy looked real suspicious. The operator told Zimmerman that officers were being dispatched and not to pursue the boy. Zimmerman apparently pursued him anyway. At some point, getting out of his car and confronting the boy. Trayvon had a bag of Skittles and a can of iced tea. Zimmerman had a 9mm handgun. The two allegedly engaged in a physical altercation. There was yelling, and then a gunshot. When police arrived, Trayvon was face down in the grass with a fatal bullet wound to the chest. Zimmerman was standing with blood on his face and back of his head and grass stains on his back, according to the Orlando Sentinel. Trayvon's lifeless body was taken away, tagged, and held. Zimmerman was taken into custody, questioned, and released. Zimmerman said he was the one yelling for help. He said that he acted in self-defense. The police say that they have found no evidence to dispute Zimmerman's claim. On another point, Trayvon is black, Zimmerman is not. Trayvon was buried on March 3rd. Zimmerman was still free and has not been arrested or charged with a crime. Yet the questions remain, why did Zimmerman find Trayvon suspicious? Why did he pursue the boy when the 911 operator instructed him not to? Why did he get out of the car, and why did he take his gun when he did? How is it self-defense when you are the one in pursuit? Who initiated the altercation? Who cried for help? Did Trayvon's body show evidence of a struggle? What moved Zimmerman to use lethal force? This case has reignited a furor about vigilante justice, racial profiling, and inequitable treatment under the law. And it has stirred the pot of racial strife. This case has reignited a furor about vigilante justice, racial profiling, and inequitable treatment under the law. And it has stirred the pot of racial strife. Now, he goes on to say, as the father of two black teenage boys, this case hits him close to home. He then says, this is the fear that seizes him whenever his boys are out in the world, that a man with a gun and an itchy finger will find them suspicious. That passion may run hot and blood run cold, that it might all end with a hole in their chest and a hole in his heart. That the law might prove insufficient to salve his loss. That is the burden of black boys in America and the people that love them, running the risk of being descended upon in the dark and caught in the crosshairs of someone who crosses the line. The racial sensitivity of this case is heavy. Trayvon's parents have said their son was murdered. Crump, the family's lawyer, told him, you know, if Trayvon would have been the trigger man, it's nothing Trayvon Martin could have said to keep the police from arresting him. Day one, hour one. Even the police chief recognizes this reality, even while disputing claims of racial bias in the investigation. Our investigation is colorblind and based on the facts and circumstances, not color. I know I can say that until I am blue in the face, but as a white man in a uniform, I know it doesn't mean anything to anybody. Zimmerman has not released a statement, but his father delivered a one-page letter to the Orlando Sentinel on Thursday. Now, according to the newspaper, the statement said that Zimmerman is Hispanic and grew up in a multiracial family. The paper quotes the letter as reading, he would be the last to discriminate for any reason whatsoever, and continues, The media portrayal of George as a racist could not be further from the truth. And disclosures made since the shooting complicates people's perception of fairness in this case. Now, according to Crump, the father was told that one of the reasons Zimmerman was arrested was because he had a squeaky clean record. It wasn't. According to the local news station, WFTV, Zimmerman was arrested in 2005 for battery on a law enforcement officer. Furthermore, ABC News reported on Tuesday that one of the responding officers corrected a witness after she told him that she heard the teen cry for help. And the Miami Herald published an article on Thursday that said three witnesses had heard the desperate wail of a child, a gunshot, and then silence. WFTV also reported this week that the officer in charge of the scene when Trayvon was shot was also in charge of another controversial case. It turns out in 2010, a lieutenant's son was videotaped attacking a black homeless man. The officer's son was not initially arrested in that case. He was later arrested when the television station broke the news. Now, although we must wait to get the results from all the investigations into Trayvon's killing, it is clear that it's a tragedy. If no wrongdoing of any sort is ascribed to the incident, it will be an even greater tragedy. One of the witnesses was a 13-year-old black boy who recorded a video for the Orlando Sentinel recounting what he saw. The boy is wearing a striped polo shirt, holding the microphone, speaking low and deliberately, and has a heavy look of worry and sadness in his eyes. He describes hearing screaming, seeing someone on the ground, and hearing gunshots. The video ends with the boy saying, "I just think that sometimes people get stereotyped, and I fit into that stereotype as the person who got shot." And that is the burden of black boys, and this case can either ease or exacerbate it. What happened here? Why did this young man get gunned down? Is there truly equal protection under the law when it involves young black men? It's time for a quick break, but when we return, I am going to play the 911 tapes, and I want you to take a close listen to the graphic details, and you decide. Be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, "Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday." That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls, of course. But first, I want to introduce to some and present to others a very special lady. She is the Chief Operating Officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting and the Executive Producer of Current Events. Now, I introduce to some and present to others. No other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, this is a curious case about Trayvon Martin. I want to play the 911 tape that happened to Trayvon. I want you to take a listen, and then I want you to get your response. Take a listen to this. It's about a couple of minutes long, but I want you to pay very close attention to what happened. And let's kind of discuss the tape a little bit. Take a listen.
911, do you need police, fire, medical?
Maybe both. I'm not sure. There's just someone screaming outside.
Okay, what's the address that they're near? Okay, and is it a male or female?
It sounds like a male.
And you don't know why?
I don't know why. I think they're yelling help, but I don't know. Just send someone quick. Say, stop.
Okay. Does he look hurt?
I can't see him. I don't want to go out there. I don't know what's going on. So they're sending.
So you think he's yelling help?
Yes.
All right. What is your
There's gunshots.
You just heard gunshots?
Yes.
How many?
This one. Jimmy, get down. No, come here.
Is he no longer yelling?
No one, I don't know. Jeremy, get in here now. Jeremy, get up here.
All right, is he right outside?
Yeah, pretty much out the back, yeah.
Is he in front of it or behind that address?
He's behind my house.
Okay.
Just stay away from the windows.
I don't hear him yelling anymore. Do you hear anything?
No, I don't because I'm hiding upstairs. There was a gunshot right outside her house. I mean, you've obviously sent someone already, right?
Yes, it's in dispatch. What's your name and phone number?
My name is... My phone number is...
How do you spell your last name? Okay. Right, do you hear any vehicles leaving or anyone else? Do you hear anything right
There's people yelling out there, but I don't want to go down there, so.
Okay, multiple people are yelling now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we do have officers on the way. Just call us back if you do hear or see anything else suspicious, like any vehicles leaving or anything like that, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All I can say is, wow. I mean, you can obviously hear somebody screaming in agony, you know, and fear more than anything else. And then there's a gunshot. And then silence. Jimmy, what happened here?
What happened is that a young man lost his life, seemingly unnecessarily, seemingly at the hands of someone who took it upon himself to make that call. What happened here is a young man's life was cut short, was cut way too short at 17. He had so much to live for, and we will never know what he would have become because of what happened that night. So a lot happened. A dream was not only deferred, but a dream was stopped that night. A mother lost her son. Father lost his son that night. I mean, it's you know, we lost yet another young man of color to an act of violence against him for no real reason. That's what happened.
So a couple of things that's kind of strike me as odd, and I want to begin by saying, how does one describe suspicious behavior when there's no act of crime being perpetrated? So, I mean, have we come a society that sees a young African-American male walking down the street and we call it suspicious behavior? The young man could not be doing anything, enjoying his candy, drinking his soda. Is that suspicious behavior? Have we come a society that believes a young African-American male is suspicious because he's walking in the neighborhood? Are we there?
Yes. Yes, we are there. And you know, in listening and watching the chatter on Twitter and on Facebook, you know, you could just the back and forth of people, what they were saying. There are, you know, several people that have told their children not to, you know, put their hoods on, for fear that they would be stopped unnecessarily. And so, you know, when did wearing a hoodie or putting your hood on your head become a suspicious behavior, as you just stated? When did we get here? And that was, you know, that's my question all week. You know, when did we get here? How did we get here that we're gunned down at such random rates? And yet we are supposed to just say, oh, he was probably doing something. It's, you know, we've long gotten away from innocent until proven guilty in this country. And it's unfortunate because, you know, for some, you know, they're always guilty. And for this young man walking around in the community that he was familiar with, it's unfortunate that whoever, you know, Mr. Zimmerman thought he was, I mean, because he wasn't the law. He was a watch person, and you know, as you alluded in your opening, in terms of was told not to pursue and did it anyway. I mean, I don't know why that isn't called into question. And so there's just so many questions about this that should cause us to be outalarmed and outraged, but we can't be outalarmed and outraged for a moment. You know, they're you know, because there's just way too many, you know, young men and women dying in our streets. And some of it we have some control over because we know who some of the people are that's doing some of the killing. And then in instances like this, it's almost like we know who killed him, and yet he's out free without, you know, even a night in jail. You know, that's what's unconscionable, is that he hasn't spent a night in jail. He hasn't spent a night away from his family to be questioned, and he hasn't, you know, lost 1 ounce of freedom for one day, and yet, you know, he for all practical purposes, gunned this young man down because he looks suspicious. That's unacceptable. That is completely unacceptable.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. Something I do want to ask, though. I want to find out, and I want to get you to weigh in as well as the callers. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I wanted to ask, if you will, how much culpability do you think the media has in the portrayal of African-American males. Not just mainstream television media, but I'm talking about magazines. I'm talking about newspapers. I'm talking about billboards. I'm talking about rap videos. I'm talking about CDs. I'm talking about music. It's interesting to me, anytime you see a portrayal of a young African-American male, it's portrayed in a negative light. It's portrayed as he's being violent, being gang-related. And so this oversaturation of the portrayal of an African-American male seems like it embeds this fear in a larger part of society. And I ask that question because when you see the portrayal of an animal being portrayed in a negative light, Peter jumps all over it. When you see too much smoking in a movie, the smoking group lobby, they are all over it. When you see too many young Caucasian women being portrayed in such a manner that is a negative or not conducive to the positive image, they're all over it. But here we are, in a lot of cases, seeing negative portrayal of African-American males, and we say nothing. Now, quite naturally, this has nothing to do with the way that Zimmerman acted upon this young man. But I can say, if you keep putting this image upon a person day in and day out, you begin to build up this sense of fear. I mean, look at the case of Muslims right now. I mean, they're in a similar situation when they get on planes, right? All of the terrorism videos or movies are around them, and when you see them on a plane, do you feel some sense of fear when you're around them? Now, it's not the reality, but it is the case of how they're being portrayed. Are we caught in that same type of situation, Jima?
Well, unfortunately we are, but, you know, I would be disingenuous if I didn't speak to the amount of violence we do towards one another. So, you know, just this weekend you had 7-9 people killed in Chicago, young people killed in Chicago. And so, and that wasn't a neighborhood watchman, that wasn't the police. And so, you know, we have to own part of the image, because it's one that we live out, it's one that we show people every day. I mean, what sells, you know, what started out as a gimmick, in my opinion, and in terms of, you know, this whole gangster rap and all that stuff, you know, became this multi-million-dollar industry, and people who've never even really lived the lifestyle began to talk about it as though they knew something about it. And so they perpetuated this whole thing. And it was all, you know, for some of them, it was just one big joke. It wasn't even real. And then on the other hand, you know, there are people that just by sight alone, you could do nothing to them. There's some that even say, I don't trust the black man unless he has on a suit. There are some that say, I crossed the street. I mean, this is some of the chatter that was on Twitter all week. I cross the street when I see a group of young black men, because I don't know what they're going to do. Or, you know, I cross the street when I see some, you know, people on a corner or whatever. And this wasn't coming off from white people. This was coming from some black people that say that, which is very interesting to me, you know, because you crossing the street is not going to stop them from attacking you if that's what their intent was anyway. So, you know, I'm not understanding what crossing the street does. Or, you know, you grabbing your purse a little closer, because if he's a professional, he can still wrangle your purse away from you. And so, you know, it's those little things, those little subtleties, those little, you know, how we respond to people. And based on what we've seen, based on what we've heard, and yet we've had no real interaction with the person. And then when we do, it's based on all this fake stuff and all this make-believe stuff. And so we respond based on what we saw the people do on TV or what we saw the people do in the movie. And then we wonder why, you know, we have such a, you know, a large gap in how we relate to one another. And it's across the board, you know. You know, the perpetuation of black women being mean and nasty and snotty is perpetuated on television. And so if a woman is self-assured, she can't be self-assured. She has to be conceited. She has to be cocky. She has to be, you know, the B word and all those other things, because that's what's portrayed. And so the same thing that's portrayed there, as you mentioned, the same thing that's portrayed with Muslims and the same thing that's portrayed with black people, same thing that's portrayed with Hispanics in terms of, you know, how they live and how they work and what jobs they do, all of that is perpetuated. And yet, you know, what you see, you know, from the other is upstanding citizens and you know married and families and all this, but like they're the only people that can be married, and by other I mean white people, as if they're the only group that can be married and have wholesome families and go to work every day. But that's what's perpetuated, and that's why you hear all this nastiness, all the rhetoric that you hear in our political discourse. It's all connected.
Yeah.
I really wish it wasn't, but at the end of the day, it's all connected.
So the issue is, to me, in Trayvon's death, in the whole situation, is the bigger picture for me is black image, black life. Black image in the context of how we are being portrayed, how we're being misinterpreted, how we communicate with each other and with other races, how people perceive us to be. And you talked about walking across the street, clutching, you know, people have talked about clutching their purses. And so we are perceived in certain ways. So black image, number one, black life, number two. Because when it comes to the murder of a young black male, it doesn't seem it has the same value if you murder a young white male. The images that are portrayed for the young man that's of Caucasian descent is going to be different from the image that's portrayed of the young black male. And that is the reality in our society. And to me, that's what Trayvon's death, this horrific death, brings to mind when I look at this. Because the reality is he did not break any laws. There was no need to pursue this young man at all. How can you define looking suspicious? Because you're African-American with a hood on? Is that suspicious? Again, black image. The fact that the young man, George Zimmerman, is not in jail, and another young man, Trayvon Martin, is dead, and no one has been arrested, shows you black life. Black image, black life is the story in this. Now, Jim, you mentioned early on about, and I talked about this in the monologue, about the fact that he was told by the police not to pursue. Now, I want the listeners to hear the 911 call that Zimmerman had with the police prior to this happening. Prior to this whole incident occurring, here is the shooter talking to the police. The police telling him not to pursue, he obviously takes off, and it sounds like he does something with something. You hear metal clicking, and I don't know if he's putting together a weapon. I don't know what this is happening here, but you can obviously hear something happening on this call. So I want you to take a close listen to the 911 call from the shooter, and then I want you to weigh in on this. Take a listen.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieve View Circle. The best address I can give you. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here now. He was just staring.
Oh, he's just walking around the area?
Looking at all the houses.
Okay.
Now he's just staring at me.
Okay.
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. Do you know what he's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
He's got his hand in his waistband. And he's a black male.
Okay. How old would you say he looks?
button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yeah. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything, okay?
Officer over here.
Yeah, we got him on the way. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. They always get away. Down towards the other entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay. Which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
All right, sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
And, George, what's the phone number you're calling from? All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at? Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah.
What's your apartment number? Okay, do you want to just meet with them right near the mailboxes then?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let them know to meet you with you out there.
Actually,
okay?
could you have him call me and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay, yeah, that's no problem.
Okay, so there's a couple of things that happened in that tape, right? Number one, the young man talked about his image. He's a black guy with a hoodie on. He says raining. Well, I mean, what do you expect if it's raining, right? Not to mention, if you're in a gated community and you see a lot of houses, a beautiful houses, why not walk around and look around? Then he said he had something in his hand. Turns out to be Skittles and a Coke. He obviously said, the policeman, not to pursue. Moreover, Zimmerman said he's coming after him. Then he turns around and starts walking towards the young man. Then what I heard was something that sounds like he put a weapon together, and then started banging on the magazine. That's what it sounds like to me. And all of a sudden, if I see someone cocking a gun, I'm gonna run too. Then he said something that was interesting. He said, "This," then it was a blank, "always gets away." What was he trying to say there? All of these things which make this case very suspicious, not to mention it was several days before they even wanted to release these 911 tapes. Because you get a chance to hear what I hear. People, I need you to weigh in on this. 323-580-5712. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Gina, what do you think about that?
Oh, man, it's just loaded listening to him on that call and the language that he's using. I mean, who's done the research to investigate whether or not there's really been break-ins in that community, since that's what he originally said on the call? You know, we've had a lot of break-ins, and this guy is walking around. So that gave him the right to pursue him, I guess, although he was told not to pursue. He has his hand in his waistband. So he had to be pretty close up on him. If he was that close up on him to see he had his hand in his waistband, could he have not seen the bright colored packaging that Skittles come in? To know that that was, you know, some candy and not a weapon. How did he make such a distinction? And just as you stated, the language that he used in describing him, the language that he used to somewhat even instigate in terms of the officer sending someone out right away. And, you know, we all want to be able to call and give a description of something that we think might be happening in our communities and hope that the law enforcement will arrive soon and quickly and that all is well. You know, that's what we all like to have. But I just feel in my heart of hearts that Mr. Zimmerman overshot no pun intended. You know, he just kind of, he went too far in his pursuit of this young man. And as you stated, there's conflicts in he's running away, he's getting away, they always get away. So if he's getting away, you know, wherever he's going, why are you pursuing him? If he, where, you know, you have no idea where he's going. And if he's visiting an area he may not be familiar with, he may be looking at the houses to see which ones he remembers as he's going back to where they're headed to. I mean, all of that, but none of it, nothing that he did, I can tell, justify him not being here anymore. Nothing.
Yeah, I have to agree. Let's go to the phone lines now. We're going to go to caller, last 4-3-1-2-7. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Patrick. This is Tracy calling from Oklahoma City.
Hey, Tracy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. As a mother of two sons who happen to be black and happen to be teens, this is just an unfortunate reminder. Not so much, you know, it doesn't even have to be a matter of racism, but that prejudice is alive and well in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Zimmerman judged prior to knowing the facts.
Yeah.
And this young man's life has been cut short as a result of it. The description is well and good. You've called in to 911. They've instructed you to let the, you know, the authorities handle it. After that, he's taking the law into his own hands. And from the description to the attire of the young man, this could have been anyone's child.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been anyone. It doesn't even have to be a black gentleman. This could have been anybody's child, and there are break-ins everywhere. There are kids into mischief everywhere. It doesn't mean that we can execute fatal judgment upon them for simply walking down the street. I'm beyond livid, and we just can't rest until not only does he spend the night in jail, but the facts get reviewed and Mr. Zimmerman has to come to justice. Even if he doesn't get his justice on this side, believe it will come, because this is unacceptable, as Gina stated.
Absolutely.
And that's all I have.
Absolutely. Thank you for that comment.
I'm enjoying the show. You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Jim, what do you think about that? I mean, Tracy put it best by saying it may not necessarily be racism, but you can bet your bottom dollar it's definitely prejudice, because he was prejudged based on his look, based on his color, based on just him looking around. So, I mean, wonderful overall assessment. Your thoughts?
I agree with that. I agree. I think Tracy hit it right on, you know, hit the nail right there on the head, because at the end of the day, as she stated, that could have been anybody's child. And if that was if that's the only thing he went on, was, you know, a young person walking in the community that just because, you know, whatever he was doing, you know, with the hoodie on, and, you know, allegedly with his hand in his waistband, if that made him pursue and become judge, jury, and executioner, just based on that, without knowing anything about the young man, and he says he's looking at me. Well, I would be looking at you too. You rolling up beside of me, talking on the phone. I don't know what that is in your hand. You know, so I mean, just some of the things he's you know, how he described it. Well, he's really staring at me now. Yeah, his hands in his waistband. He said that a couple of times on that call, that his hand was in his waistband. You know, and the implications behind that. So this is just, it is. I'm so with Tracy in that. I'm so outdone and trying to have some sort of logical and intelligent conversation about it, and trying to maintain my emotions about it. It's difficult, because I do know that, you know, this could be anybody's son. And yet at the same token, you know, I'm angry that we as a race of people, as a community, have allowed our young boys to be taken advantage of. So, that we've allowed them to be put out there like that, and that we don't scream loud enough when we know who the shooter is in our own communities. And so we have some, and so, you know, I'm trying to walk that tightrope and put my feelings in the right compartment so I can give it what it needs to be given. Because aside from that, Trayvon needs what he needs, and that family needs that. And then, you know, after that conversation and after that justice has been served, we've got to still have the conversation about, you know, what is happening in our communities where our young black boys are feeling the need to shoot one another and kill one another. You know,
what is
that all about? We still have to have that conversation.
Absolutely. And so, again, I go back to the bigger picture for me. It's black image, black life. Because when this case comes to a conclusion, the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case comes to a conclusion, then we still have to look at what's happening in our society on a daily basis when African-Americans are killing other African-Americans, and we should have the same amount of outrage, right? And so although this is an incident of horrific proportions, we still need to be just as concerned when it happens in our neighborhood every single day. You mentioned about the incident of five young men in Chicago dying. We should be outraged about that. I know that in my own neighborhood and where I'm from, on 30 Row, it happens all the time. And so we should still be up in arms when these issues come, because black image and black life needs to be important. We should have a standard. We should be just as strong in oppositions like PETA when they see some atrocity happen to an animal. We should be just as strong when you see the smokers out in their ads and they have too much smoking on TV or on shows. You hardly ever see any smoking in movies now, right? We can do the same thing when you see an image portrayal of a young man. We can refuse to take those parts. We can refuse to frequent those movies. There's a lot that we can do. And every time that you hear this Trayvon case, I want you to think of black image, black life. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, I have one more tape to play. This time is of the family and the attorney. What you're going to hear is some startling things that took place from the police department that they did on Trayvon, but they didn't do on Zimmerman. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGMA, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323 1-800-580-5712. I also want to let you know, don't forget to visit our blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMAD as in Delta, E as in Echo. TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. This is where you'll find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. I invite you to check that out. Now, I was talking about, we were talking about the Trayvon Martin case, and I want to know, is there equal justice on equal protection under the law? And we've played already the 911 call by a witness. We've also played the 911 call by the shooter, Zimmerman. And we talked a little bit about his pursuit and all of the different things that happened in that short spurt of time before the execution of Trayvon. And now I want to hear you. I want you to hear some startling comments made by the attorney about what happened during the investigation. This is really interesting. Take a listen.
Family goes to sleep every night saying, "Will we ever see justice for the murder of our son?"
It's been 17 days since this shooting happened. It's been 17 days that evidence has been in the hands of the Sanford Police Department. At this point, the family has told us they can't trust anything. If you lie in the small things, you will lie in the big things. We have seen cover up lie after lie. We cannot be confident that the Sanford Police Department will turn over the evidence the way that it should, the way that it was presented to them, to the FDLE.
Also, let me say this. It's real important that we remember all the just unprecedented things that happened in this allegedly fair and impartial investigation. And a lot of them were uncovered by you all. And think about it. We're going to take the person who just shot a kid in cold blood word that he's squeaky clean. We're not even going to bother to do a background check on him. But yet, we're going to do a background check on the dead kid. We're going to take blood and alcohol analysis on the dead kid, but yet we don't do it on the shooter. How can they trust this investigation? How can they trust this police department? We want the Federal Department of Justice to take over this investigation. We want an arrest.
No,
I think very simply, it takes good people like these witnesses coming forward, because we do know that bad things and evil happen when good people don't step forward. So it doesn't matter who they are. Good people all over the world, people from London newspapers are calling about this case because they say, at least you have to arrest them. This is America. We are the standard for justice and court system. We are the standard, and for him not to be arrested is just an atrocity. It's all the world is watching, and we want to know what the Sanford Police Department, the state attorney's office, and the state of Florida is going to do. All the world is watching to see how this is going to conclude. We want an arrest. It had been more than 17 days. We want an arrest. We want an arrest. How many nights do they have to go to bed knowing that the killer of their son is walking around free?
Thank you very much.
Wow. I mean, it's to me, and I must admit, when I first heard about the Trayvon Martin case, you know, I said, well, you know, this is another case of this and that. But during the preparation for the show today, and over the past week as I began to read the articles, when the 911 tapes came out, and then listening to the attorney talk about all the things that happened, it just darkened my heart to see that this could happen in 2012. You know? And so it just to me, it is a lot of things that happened in this particular case that's curious, and to say the least. So, Jim, what do you think about this? I mean, they take a background check on Trayvon, but does not do a background check on the shooter. They take blood analysis of Trayvon, but they do not take blood and alcohol analysis of the shooter. How many more things can we find out that went wrong, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, that family will be able to file suit against everybody. I mean, you know, there's been so many things that have been that has been done that has been so out of order, and none of it is going to bring their son back. But hopefully, it will have an impact on that police department, where they will not do this next time. They will do due diligence. They will do what they're supposed to do. And there's no way somebody. I mean, you know. And here's yet another example of something that's totally racially motivated that we want to hesitate and make it be about race, because it is about race. I mean, there's no way if the tables was turned and this was a black man who shot somebody, that he would not have been arrested that day. There's no way you can tell me that if this was a black man who had shot a white kid, who had shot any other kid, even if he had shot a black kid, he would probably still be arrested that day. If he on the phone talking to people and they had told him not to pursue and he did, they would have arrested him for that. So this is really, you know, there's a racial component to this, and we know it. There's a racial component to this that he was, you know, a young black man, you know, in a neighborhood that somebody thought he didn't belong in and didn't fit in, and so was treated unfairly and unjustly simply because of that. Nothing that he did, and you know, I would like to see the footage, which I know they have it probably from 7-Eleven. You know, who's talked to the owner at 7-Eleven? What did he come in there and buy? Mm-hmm. You know, we know he had the Skittles and the iced tea in his pocket. I'm sure that night that, you know, if it was, you know, whatever time of evening it was, I'm sure there's another part of this. And as time goes on, the longer this lingers, and as the attorney said, the world is watching now.
Yeah.
And the longer this sits out here without something being done, without an arrest being made, this is not like we don't know who did this. We are real clear on who did this.
Yeah.
And the fact that you say his record was squeaky clean is irrelevant.
And the fact that we find out that it wasn't squeaky clean after people start digging into his investigation, yeah.
Right. But he just killed somebody.
Yeah.
An unarmed young man is no longer with us because
of
what he did.
Right.
Not because of what the young man did, but because of what Zimmerman did. So there has to be an arrest. There has to be. And I'm glad, you know, who's ever going down there to continue to shine the spotlight on it, I'm glad about it. I hope the family, you know, is getting the support that they need. And, you know, and then as you were reading and just reading different stories, how they had taken them to the morgue without any identification.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't even do anything in the community to find out if anybody knew the young man, you know. Really?
Right,
I mean,
right.
he in the morgue a day listed as a John Doe. And you know, had the father not had the good sense to continue to call and find out, he would have never known.
Black image, black life. Absolutely. Black image, black life. I mean, that's what it all boils down to me. So as we get ready to close this segment out about Trayvon, I do have one final question. And it really pertains to the fact that the law is supposedly on his side. The fact that there's legislation that was passed in the state that justifies him being free, to me, is amazing. So we really need to pay close attention to what's happening at the local level, especially when it comes to these gun laws. I mean, because they sneak these things in here and that. I mean, this is pretty much cold-blooded murder, and he's able to walk away because in their eyes it's justified. So, Jim, let me ask you this. What do you make of the notion of self-defense? How could this be self-defense?
Well, you heard the language on the 911 call where he said his hand is in his waistband. Yeah, that's it. His hand is in his waistband. Like I said, he stated that about three times. And then he's making some allegations that the young man attacked him and You know, they even went so far as to say that Mr. Zimmerman had grass stains on his pants or something. And, you know, but yet we hear and the witnesses hear someone asking for help.
And he pursues him. He pursues. He chases
right.
him, basically.
Right. Right. You know. And I don't know you. You don't. You can't identify yourself as an officer. So you could be crazy. So I'm not just gonna
exactly.
let you attack me and me not
exactly
attack you
right.
back.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I'm not gonna let you just jump me and me not try to defend myself. And so, you know, who was the real aggressor here? And I think we have the answer to that. We know who the real aggressor was here, and we know if Trayvon did do anything, he did something to protect himself. But unfortunately, Zimmerman had something that he didn't, and that was a weapon.
That's right.
And when that body is found by the police, and they see no weapon, and they see nothing that could have even been used as a weapon, and they don't make an arrest. That's just completely unacceptable. There's no way whoever's in charge shouldn't be in their position either. Whoever that chief of police is, he should be out of there. And
yeah.
and whoever the officers are that did the original questioning, they need to go back to school because they're not very good at getting information. They need to be placed on desk duty, as they say. So I mean, it's just so many things have failed this family and have failed this young man, and I just hope, you know, as time goes on, that we don't get weary, and that we keep the pressure on them to continue to release information, and that the family gets and I believe that they've turned it over to the state attorney's office, and you've had attorneys on different shows. I was watching CNN last night, and one of their lead legal people was saying, and she was a prosecutor, and now she's a defense attorney. She said, "There's no way this man shouldn't be in jail. He should be in jail, period."
Yeah. At least until the investigation.
Nothing, right. She said, "There's nothing about what happened that tells me he should not be in jail." And as a prosecutor, she said, "I don't know what those prosecutors down there are doing where they haven't saw fit to arrest him yet." She said, "This is a huge mischaracterization of our justice system, a huge." And so, and so here we sit.
Well, you know, speaking of our justice system, I want to shift the conversation now to a topic that's going to be probably prevalent in the news in the days and weeks to come. And this is about some 14-year-olds being given life in prison. So the question I pose right now is, 14 years old too young for life in prison? Now, there's an article in 12 News Now by Sevilla Omar out of MSNBC that says the following. Evan Miller and Contrell Jackson are lifers, condemned at 14 to spend their lives in prison without the possibility of parole for their involvement in separate murders. The backers say their sentences are cruel and unusual, leaving them without the second chance the young are so often given. The U.S. Supreme Court agrees. Next Tuesday, the court will hear arguments in their cases, and its rulings could have far-reaching effects. Now, more than 2,200 people nationwide have been sentenced to life imprisonment without parole for crimes they committed as juveniles, which is defined as 17 or younger, according to Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama, a civil rights group. The group hopes the companion cases will be another victory for juvenile criminals who have found some relief before Supreme Court over the past 7 years. Now, in 2005, the court abolished executions for juvenile offenders. Then, 2 years ago, the court ruled that it is unconstitutional to impose life sentences on juveniles convicted of crimes that do not involve homicides. Now, of course, lawyers for Miller, he's now 23, and Jackson, now 26, contend that juveniles are work in progress and will argue that forensic evidence shows adolescent brains are not fully developed. Condemning an immature, vulnerable, and not yet fully formed adolescent to life in prison, no matter the crime, is constitutionally a disproportionate punishment, they say in their petition to the court. The Equal Justice Initiative declined to discuss the case because of the pending hearing. Now, Kim Taylor Thompson, a professor at clinical law at the New York University School of Law, has studied juvenile offenders for nearly a decade and agrees with this group. No one is excusing the fact of what happened, she said. What we are saying is, did these two young men engage in thought processes that would make us say today, they're the type of individuals who can never be rehabilitated, never change, and be locked up to never see the day of light of day? We believe that they deserve a second look. Now, this is an issue that my good friend Leo Baron Hicks and I debate all the time. Now, Jima, what do you think about this? Is 14 years old too young to be given life imprisonment? Now, I know you have some experience in this area as you when you were the director of a youth facility. So I thought it would be interesting to get your perspective on this.
My short answer is yes, I think they are too young to be given life in prison. And I actually completed a survey from, I can't remember the source, Global Youth Services, I think, did a survey this week on just this topic. And the question was just that simple. Do you think 14 is too young to for someone to receive life in prison? And I get both sides of the coin in terms of, the crime. If they go out and commit such a heinous crime, then they should be held accountable for the rest of their lives. And there's a way to hold someone accountable for the rest of their lives without incarcerating them for the rest of their life. And so if we say that our penal system is supposed to be one of rehabilitation, then we have to do a better job of making sure that that rehabilitation is occurring. Unfortunately, our penal system is just one big money machine and one big failure. So they haven't done a real good job on the rehabilitation side. So for a 14-year-old to go into a juvenile place, I would assume first, and then go once they turn 17 or whatever to an adult facility. I think that there has to be something in between that. And having worked with some young juvenile offenders who at the age of 13 had committed murder, there's no way I could have seen any one of those 13-year-olds locked up anywhere for the rest of their life, simply because their minds were just so not, they weren't even 13. They was more like 6 or 7 in how they functioned. And there was one who had some real severe mental health issues. And I think we do a disservice when we don't include that mental health part of what we're talking about when we're talking about what kids are going out to do, because a lot of it is connected to some environmental issues that are going on. And so the short answer is, do I think they should go to prison for life? No. Do I think they should be given an opportunity to redeem themselves and to try to make up as much as they can, although they can never bring back the person's life in which they took? But is there something they can do in the middle of that? Yes. I mean, keeping them in prison is still keeping them alive, and you paying for that. If they come out and get to have some semblance of some sort of where they're paying back into society instead of taking away from it, then I think we would be doing them a greater service by doing that.
Well, can you talk a little bit about the case that you had? And you don't have to mention any names. I'm not sure what the legal ramifications are. But the case that talks a little bit about you were involved in with the guy that was really young. He didn't seem like he had any chance of rehabilitation. You don't have to be specific, but kind of give just a little background of that.
Well, I mean, there was one, there was more than one, as I stated, but there was one who had done something, had killed someone, and at that time I was working in the state of Missouri. What makes Missouri, probably one of the better states in terms of working with its juvenile offenders, is that they, you know, the system has degrees of places where kids can go. You don't find that in a lot of states. It's either A or B, and that's it. Whereas the state of Missouri has levels, and so when you get to a certain level, you were considered at the highest level in juvenile, and so that's where I worked. I worked at the highest level that juveniles could go, and this young man had done something and had killed someone and was giving at that time what they would term juvenile life, and this was his crime happened pre-Clinton's juvenile crime law that subsequently came out in the 90s that stated you could certify 13-year-olds as adults. So his happened before, but I did have some that happened after that law came into effect. So this young man had committed his crime, and at that time was given juvenile life. By that, he was given 5 years, and at 5 years, and then he would turn 18, and then he would, you know, presumably be able to be released. Well, what happened is about midway through that period, we realized that he wasn't ready to be released, and so we petitioned the courts to keep him past that 18th birthday, and we were able to do that. And in doing that, we were also able to really get him to admit that what he had done was wrong, because prior to that, he kept blaming the victim. Well, if the victim had just did this, if the victim had just done that, if the victim, and never anything about what he had done. And so because of that extra time we had with him, we was able to get him to really see what his part was and own what he had done, and to stop blaming the victim. There was another one where a young man who was real severely mentally disabled, and at that time they were beginning to cut back on the mental health dollars in state systems. And that is the backlash of that, is that then they force these people who really have mental health issues into correctional places, and then they're not really given and getting all of the help that they need, because the people that they're now dealing with are not fully equipped to handle some of those things that are going on in their minds. And if they're not medicated, then they're really not going to be amenable to treatment. And so with us being a treatment facility and really trying to work through, because of his mental health issues and he really needed to be medicated and he really needed a different type of setting, it was difficult for us to break. It was difficult for us to really, you know, get a hold of him. But his mind, he was completely aware of what he did. He knew it was wrong, but his thing was, I had to get this person before they got me, because they said they were going to get me. And he was 13 at the time. And he was one that I said, you know, I really don't think there's anything we're going to be able to do for this one. I think he really is going to, you know, go through his time here and then probably. And one of the things that Missouri did was it instituted something called dual jurisdiction, where that based on a crime and the age of a kid, they could be committed to both the Division of Youth Services as well as the Department of Corrections. And in the event that they did something else while they were still on the juvenile side, they could automatically be transferred over to the adult side, and which is a great motivator in itself for some kids who really don't want to go to jail, and so they'll do things to stay out of there. And so for this young man, his needs was really more mental health, and locking him up wasn't going to really address those mental health issues at all.
So I'm glad you addressed it in that fashion, because I think when we initially see this, and when the talking heads and the pundits and the media begin to talk about this in the weeks and days to come, you know, they're going to paint it as a black and white issue. And as you illustrated and laid out so eloquently, is that there's a lot of different layers to this issue. Namely mental health, namely the fact that they can or may not be able to be rehabilitated. So for the fact that this is a black and white issue, either yes, they should be given life, or no, they should be given life, it sounds like to me, and Jima, you have experienced this, and in the Missouri system, that there should be a system in place so that the young person can be evaluated over and over again, an assessment be made initially and further along to before they make the final decision on whether this person should be in life or prison. You think that is the case?
I agree. And the problem is, and this is a national crisis that we're in, the problem is that there are no national standards around treating of juvenile offenders. So each state is privy to do whatever it wants to do for whatever. There's nothing that holds them accountable. And having worked and consulted in several different states across the country, I've seen some horrific conditions that we're placing our children in because we say they're criminals. And yet we expect them to come out of that system. And sometimes the place that we're sending them is worse than what they came from. It's not clean. The people there are mean. The food isn't good. It's not safe. They're having to fight their way through something every day. And this is supposed to be where they go after they've done whatever they've done on the streets. And so we as a nation have failed our children in a horrible way when it comes to treating them, those that have become juvenile offenders. We've done them a great disservice. And so we have not nationalized any sort of standards to address this issue. And that's why each state can do what it wants to do. And some of them are all about, you know, locking them up. It's just like the adult system. You know, there's payment made for keeping those beds 90% full. So, you know, there's a reason why there are some states who have high arrest rates for juveniles. And that's because, you know, their places are privately owned and privately operated, and everything is about profit. And so we have to keep, you know, kids in those beds. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. And being tough on crime and having a stance on crime doesn't mean that I'm no longer compassionate about people. You can be tough on crime and still be compassionate, especially when you're talking about juvenile offenders who, for the most part, if given an opportunity to make some better choices, they will. But we've got to provide them with the necessary tools to be able that when they come out, they can still go and do something. But we cut off so much in terms of what they're able to do when they get out that there's no surprise that they'll go back to the life that they once knew because that life is providing them with something that we're not providing them at all.
Yeah. I want to shift the conversation to another topic that was pretty hot and surprising this week, and that's about stealing Tide laundry detergent. Tide liquid laundry soap appears to have become a favorite target of shoplifters around the nation who are jacking the product from store shelves in bulk, then selling it on the black market. Thieves simply load up shopping carts full of the bright orange bottles, then bolt at the door. One con in Minnesota appears to have liberated $25,000 worth of the stuff in 15 months before he was eventually arrested. Jima, what is going on with Tide laundry detergent?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I did make reference to this on Facebook, and one of my friends, she called me and was like, you know, Tide is expensive, you know, and it's the best thing on the market. You know, when you're talking about getting your clothes, you know, for her, you know, in terms of getting your clothes clean and having a nice smell, and you don't even have to use fabric softener because it comes with Irene. And so she had all these glowing things to say about Tide. And so, you know, people are literally just going to the stores, say Walmart, and they might buy three of them, you know, and the big bottle of Tide is going to run you about $20. And Tide, you know, her argument is Tide is expensive. And why is the laundry detergent so expensive? And so it doesn't, you know, do you any good to buy a smaller bottle because then you end up spending twice as much. And so you want to go in and get the big bottle, but that big bottle is going to run you about $20. And yet, you know, the person that might walk out the store with a few extra might sell it to you, you know, two for $10. So you can save $10. And, you know,
this is crazy, though. I mean we come to a society where we selling Tide on the black market. I mean, you know, I'm of the generation of the food stamp market, right? You get two for one, I think it was back in the day. It's right, so, and you get these food stamps and you get the money for it and you can go buy what you need. You can buy toilet paper and things of that nature, which you couldn't do on food stamps. So to me, that was a rational thinking. And then it was just simpler trade and barter. I mean, you know, it to me, it was a little bit more rational. But here we are in 2012, again, in the 21st century, looking at the fact that people are stealing Tide laundry detergent. Well, the good news is that people are trying to be clean, fresh and
right,
clean.
Right.
The bad news is they're still in Tide. Now, I guess you think gas prices being $5 a gallon is causing people to do this? The jobless rate is causing people to do this?
I think it's a combination of a whole lot. I mean, you know, when I go to the grocery store, you know, I pretty much buy the same thing every time I go. And so I know when something has increased in price. I think I told you last year what happened that the Velveeta block of cheese is now $5 and something, because it used to be $4 and something. And I saw it go up incrementally. I actually saw the change. And I was like, well, what's going on here? And so, and that's just one thing that I noticed. And milk is another thing that I noticed, that those prices will shoot up like nobody's business. You go in the store one day and it's $1.50, and you go back in there and it's $2.50, and you're trying to figure out, well, what happened to the cows that all of a sudden the milk is so high? And so, you know, I think the gas prices has a lot to do with it, but, you know, I really think we're just getting scammed on so many levels as consumers, because we are consumers. We consume a whole lot. We don't grow a whole lot. You know, we very seldom do anything for ourselves. We outsource everything, from groceries,
lawn care, to laundry,
to cutting your grass, to, yep. I mean, we outsource everything. And so, you know, we are to blame, you know, a lot for what's happening, because, you know, we've made ourselves overly dependent on someone else to provide for us. And they know it, whoever that they are. You know, the owners of the trucks and the stations and stuff, they know it. But this whole Tide thing, it kind of knocked me down, because I was like, Tide, really? You know, and why Tide? I guess, you know, I was trying to figure out, well, why not Gain or Fab or, you know, some other sort of, you know, laundry soap. Was it just soap powder, or was it Tide? Is it some secret ingredient in Tide that is making it hot on the black market? That's what I was trying to figure out.
You know, I was just thinking that's all my mom used to buy, Tide. I mean, I really didn't know it was another laundry detergent even exist until I was an adult. So, you know, that big old orange with those circles on it, man, that's it. Tide was it.
And I was not a Tide user until you and I got married, because you made me buy Tide. No, I'm just kidding.
That's all I knew, so hey. All right, we're gonna shift the conversation here to presidential politics here in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Hello, New York! And then to know that Reverend Al Green was here. I'm so in love with you.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online. driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, as a reminder, Faith Missionary Baptist Church in TaylorMade is getting ready for a second annual hunger-free summer program. Now, this is where we invite pre-K, primary, secondary education in, and we feed them a breakfast and a lunch. Not only do we feed them, but we also give them STEM education. We do reading, we do writing, we do creative writing, and we also focus on, for the preschoolers, we really focus on getting them to learn how to read. We really focus on sight words, getting them to understand the fundamentals. And we've had a lot of success with our program. In fact, we've had some of the children come back and report to us that they're now making straight A's in school. They've improved their grades tremendously. So we've begun to get a lot of good reports. And we're asking for your help. There are three ways that you can do so. First, go out to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. Out there, you can make a donation, and you can also choose the option, which is number two, is to fill out a registration and volunteer form. Now, by going out to TaylorMade101.com and clicking on Hunger Free, just click the donate button and donate to your heart feel content. We also ask that if you can't donate or if you can't volunteer for the program, we ask that you do number three, which is tell somebody. You never know who can or who's in a position to help contribute to this program. Moreover, you can also go out to our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com and click the like button on our Facebook page. And in fact, by doing that, we'll be able to go out and show corporate sponsors how much support we're getting from our listeners. Again, there are three ways to help. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade, D as in Delta, E as in Echo, 101.com, and clicking on Hunger Free. We appreciate your support. Now, let's talk about presidential politics. Now, Jima, you know, the president released this amazing video this week. And it really kind of put into the minds of people all of the different accomplishments he was able to obtain over the last 3 years. What did you make of the video? And in stark contrast to the movie that came out on HBO, Game Change, it seems like to me there was a strategy there in when it was released. But at any rate, what did you make of this particular presentation compared to Game Change?
Okay, well, several things jumped out at me right off the bat. I think in having watched Game Change, which, you know, I have become an avid fan, and every time it comes on, I have to watch it. And I find something out fascinating every time I watch it. But I think what it did, and the timing, you know, our president is very strategic. He's very strategic. And so he let us have all this conversation about Game Change. And we saw who they were and what was happening in that campaign. And then we saw who we ended up with in terms of him and what he's been able to accomplish. And then you compare that to the people that are currently running. There really is no comparison, right?
And so definitely agree with that.
Right. And so you look at that 17 minutes, and it wasn't so much what he's done that impressed me. What impressed me the most was how he is a true bone-to-the-bone thinker. He is going to think things completely through from every angle. And when they talk about the very beginning, about the financial crisis, I've often said, and we've often said on this show, I don't think we knew how bad things really were. I think we, you know, which if we didn't know, and now we're hearing from them that they didn't really know how bad things really were until that meeting they had back in Chicago, that things, we were really probably one sneeze away from going over the edge, and we were none the wiser. We did not have a clue, we as American citizens, we did not have a clue that we were that close to going off the cliff, so to speak. And so I'm thinking, you know, and it's not just to take us back in the moment of nostalgia, but it reminds us that we have a lot of work yet left to be done, and so we can't stop now because there's still a lot to do. These are some things I said I wanted to do that I have not been able to accomplish yet because of the crisis we were in. And now that we are beginning to turn the corner, now, you know, I need to be here to finish what I started, basically. That's what I hear. I need to stay here to finish what I start.
You know, so when you look at Game Change and all its glory and all of the different things that that became very obvious throughout that process, and then you compare and contrast the video that President released, and you look at all of the magnificent things that he did, how is it then, when we look at the opposition, how can people be so mean to this president? And I want you to answer that in the context of this most recent attack that's starting to, and people are starting to see this more and more in the coming days and weeks to come. But there's a new sticker out that says, "Don't renege in 2012. And the renege is spelled R-E-N-I-G. Don't renege in 2012. And it has the Obama symbol and then a little, you know, like a little cross across the symbol. We're going to put it out on our blog in probably by tomorrow. But just to say that all the things that he's done for this country, why are people so mean to him?
Well, it goes back to what our caller said earlier today. You know, there is still some prejudiceness in this world, and there is nothing that this president has done that will cause one to have such negative venom that has been spewed at him over and over and over again. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount that continues to come out when he's just taking it, you know, one step at a time. He's not making the popular decision. He's not making decisions that everybody likes, but he's making decisions that in the long run will be in the best interest for our country. And that's all of us. You know, that's not one segment of the population. That's not one, a person with this type of income or that type of income. It is for everybody. Everybody can benefit from what this president is trying to yet accomplish. And so to have that, and I believe whoever car that was on, I read somewhere that they took it off their car because it just caused them so much issues from people when people would see it. So I think they've taken it off their bumper right now, which is probably a good thing.
Right. So the name of the movie, if you haven't been able to see it, is the HBO special, of course, is called Game Change, and we talked about it last week. And if you want to get a little insight on the show, you just listen to our show from last week. And the name of President Obama's, I'm going to call it, new movie, it's about 16 minutes and 57 seconds, about 17 minutes long. And it's called The Road We've Traveled. And it is an awesome display. And in fact, I'm going to play the audio version of it, but I would encourage you to go out to YouTube and check it at the very end of our show. After we close the show out and after we do our closing, at the end of our closing, I'm going to play it and just let it run. You have to be plugged into the site. It won't be aired over the air, but you will be able to plug into it, listen to it later if you haven't had an opportunity to check it out. But I would encourage you to do so because it really enumerates all of his major accomplishments. And so if you really want to, you know, go and look at when it's time to compare and contrast the candidates are running today, Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul. When you look at that particular people, look at those who are running, and you look at that, and you look at President Obama, and you look at what their direction that they want to take the country, and then you look at President Obama, what he's done, and where he's trying to go. You really have enough information to make the right decision. And so I'm not going to encourage people to vote one way or the other, but I will encourage you to go out there and listen to the facts. I mean, get involved. Find out what's going on. Don't make your decision based on what somebody else told you. Go out there and look for yourself. And I guarantee you, once you lay it all down and you really vote your interest, it's going to be very difficult for you to choose anybody else than President Barack Obama. So speaking of the other candidates, Gene, what is going on with Rick Santorum and his comments about English-speaking people in Puerto Rico?
You know, I've given up trying to figure out Rick Santorum. You know, every time I try to give him I'm not going to say a pass, but I'm like, okay, surely he gets it. Then he goes and does something else. And it's every day with him. And you know, it's one thing to want to, and I spoke on this when I was talking about Sarah Palin and her allegiance to her people in Alaska. You know, his allegiance to his base would never get him to be elected president. It just won't, because there's way more people in the world than what's in his base and way more people that'll go out and vote. But, you know, then again, he may know something I don't know, because they are moving, you know, for us to, you know, have this notion that our vote doesn't count. They're doing a whole lot to suppress that vote for it not to count. And so Rick Santorum is, every day is something different. And I'm sure if I was to turn on local TV channel or national media, he's probably said something today, which I think he said today that it went, not if, but when he wins Illinois, then he will be the nominee. That's what he said today.
So I understand. You know, I took a look, I just want to say several months ago, and at the GOP, and I tried to really get engaged and say, let me go in with an objective view. Let me listen to the candidates in all their glory and try to find out if this is something that I could entertain. But, you know, shortly after that, I hear Rick Santorum talk about blah people. And then I hear Newt Gingrich talking about President Obama being a food stamp president. I'm like, man, is this real? And so then I said, okay, well, you know, maybe that's a slip of the tongue, or maybe they had a mistake. And then weeks later, it becomes a war on women.
Mm.
I'm saying, how in the world are these candidates are running for a national office for the entire United States, not just their base, but they're running for the entire United States of America? I don't understand how these people consider themselves to be electable at the end of the day. So no matter whether they win the Republican nomination or not, I just don't see a path forward for them to a national office because of all of the things that they've done to themselves when it comes to everybody else outside of their what they call their base. Dima, what's their path forward?
That's a hard question. I don't know, because this attack that they have against women and women's health is unbelievable. I mean, it has taken on a face of its own, and it's just ugly. And yet not one of them is trying to dial it back in terms of, you know, what's happening across the country and all these states. They're just kind of like moving right along, like, you know, well, there's nothing I can do about it because that's a state issue. Okay, you might be right about that, but you can best believe you won't be representing me as a president if you can't, you know, stand up to some of these states and say what they're doing is wrong. And it's just like somebody said about Mitt Romney, you know, if you can't stand up to Rush Limbaugh, how are you going to stand up to Russia?
That's right.
You know, none of them came out and said nothing strong or emphatic about that whole situation. It was, oh, I wouldn't have used those words. It was, you know, they used all these other little things, but nobody ever came out and made a hard statement except for the president. You know, and now the need for them to try to compare Rush Limbaugh and Bill Maher, I think that's a false equivalency.
Mm-hmm,
and But I think the candidates in themselves, I mean, look who's left out of all of those people that was running, which was a circus in itself. I mean, it was just a big circus from day one. And here's who we're left with. And, you know, one who doesn't know who he is, so he really can't tell you what his platform is. One who professes to be so above everybody else intellectually that he doesn't want to dummy him. He has to dummy himself down to talk to everybody. That would be Newt Gingrich. The first one was Mitt Romney.
Right.
Rick Santorum, who just, I don't even have words to describe him because he's just so far out there. And then, you know, Ron Paul, who didn't really want to sign, think the Civil Rights Bill should have been signed. So according to him, you know, I'm just not important in his world at all.
So that's what's so, I guess, so odd to me is that if they want to run for a national office, these things, they can't. I mean, there's no way for them to think they're going to get the minority vote. I'm talking about Black and Latino, or the women vote. Here are the 10 shocking attacks from the GOP's war on women. We talked about this war on women. I want to kind of define it real quick. Republicans not only want to reduce women's access to abortion care, they're actually trying to redefine rape. After a major backlash, they promised to stop, but they haven't yet. A state legislator in Georgia wants to change the legal terms of victims of rape, stalking, and domestic violence to accusers. In South Dakota, Republicans proposed a bill that could make it legal to murder a doctor who provides abortion care. That's for real, y'all. Republicans want to cut nearly $1 billion of food and other aid to low-income pregnant women, mothers, babies, and kids. In Congress, Republicans have a bill that would let hospitals allow a woman to die rather than perform an abortion necessary to save her life. Maryland Republicans ended all county money for a low-income kid's preschool program. And at the federal level, Republicans want to cut the same program, Head Start, by $1 billion. Two-thirds of the elderly poor women, and Republicans are taking aim at them too. A spending bill will cut funding for employment services, meals, and housing for senior citizens. Congress just voted for a Republican amendment to cut all federal funding for Planned Parenthood. And finally, if that wasn't enough, Republicans are pushing to eliminate all funds for the only federal family planning program. Now, this, of course, comes from MoveOn.org. So, I mean, given that, just that alone, there's no way they should get a single woman's vote in 2012. What do you think, Jeannie?
Well, right, and not only that, though. I mean, you left out some really big ones for me. The one in Arizona where they're telling the doctors to lie to the patient.
This is recently passed, right? Mm-hmm.
Right, mandated that they lie about, you know, whatever the issue is with the woman. Now, here's a doctor who takes an oath to do no harm, and so now they're going against their medical thing because of law. Some people in Congress who probably don't even have, you know, half a degree is telling them to lie about something. That's one. You have here in the state of Texas where we have completely, thanks to the great, wonderful, awesome, which I'm being facetious, Rick Perry, we have lost all federal funding for Planned Parenthood, which means millions of women and children will now go uncared for and not be able to seek treatment and get tests ran. Here in the state of Texas, you have just recently in Colorado where they have passed a bill in the House to allow it to be considered homicide if a woman has an abortion. She will be charged with homicide.
Yeah.
And this just happened, so across the country. So on the one hand, you are attacking women, and then on the other hand, you are attacking voter suppression, you know, people's voting rights. And so you're not gonna get the women's vote, and now you're trying to cut out as many, not just Black people, but there are some, you know, believe it or not, world out there. There's low income white people too that can't afford to go and get a voter registration card. that won't be able to, they won't be able to go get their voter ID that they're so pushing. It's not just going to be black people. It's gonna, you know, poor people. You know, poor people. That's everybody. Elderly people. That's everybody. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that are not going to be able to vote due to the suppression, and then there's going to be some that can that won't vote for them because of all the things they've done against women. So I'm not real sure what they're doing. I'm baffled by it all.
So, which means there probably could be some unintended consequences come November with this voter suppression activity.
That's correct. And I think they're already seeing some of those unintended consequences by some of the things that's happening right now across the country with all the things they're doing against women. I mean, there are some consequences out there. You look at what's happening in the state of Wisconsin, you know, what started out last year dealing with the whole unions and collective bargaining, and Scott Walker didn't think that people was going to last that long. Well, they've outlasted him. And he will, you know, they did what they were supposed to get him recalled. You had another state senator out there who was on the recall list. She just said, I'm done, resigned, effective immediately. She didn't want to go through it because she knew she wasn't going to win. And so there's been pressure and there's been some pushback. And so there's going to be some, they're going to feel some of those unintended consequences. I mean, now they're getting these votes because right now people don't have to show up with any ID, any photo ID. But come November, when it's time to vote, they're going to feel some of that, too. It's not all going to be Democrats that ain't going to be able to go vote. It's going to be some Republicans and some independents that's not going to be able to go and vote either.
That's true. Well, I want to shift now to gas prices. Staying in the same vein, but gas prices. Now, and I said this months ago. I mean, it is depressing to see that that gas go from, you know, $3.29 by the time I go to work in the morning. By the time I come back home, it's $3.69, up 40 cents. And I know you're able to see it in real time as it's changing, you know, when you go in the store and come back out, it's changed. Mm-hmm. What is going on with these gas prices? And why is everybody thinking that the president has anything to do with the gas prices?
Well, because on a small scale, we really think the president has the power to do everything. And in reality, he doesn't. He really can't do a whole lot without the help of Congress. And we know this Congress isn't going to help him do anything. But in this particular instance, he really doesn't have anything to do with this. This is really about those speculators, and it's a global thing. I mean, it's bigger. I mean, if he was to go, as he stated in his speech earlier this week, and start drilling everywhere they told him to go drill, that will not have an impact on today's prices. The drilling that they want him to go and do will not have an impact on your gas prices today. So if he goes and drills everywhere that has open land and got some oil underneath, that's 30 years down the road. So what is it that he can do, or Congress, or the speculators? It's really the speculators, whoever they are. And who are they? It's almost like they're some mythical group or something that's just sitting up there like the Wizard of Oz behind the green curtain. I don't know. Who are these people that gets to play with people's lives? And that's what they're doing. They're playing with people's lives. And as you stated, it is a mind thing. When you go out and your gas is one price and you come back and it's a whole nother price, it really plays on your psyche because you're trying to figure out, okay, did something happen in the world in the hour I was in the grocery store that has caused this to happen? Are we under attack? Your mind goes to all kinds of places. Cause,
exactly.
Right, because you're like, something had to have happened for gas to go up 40 cents and I was just in the store for an hour.
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's real crazy. Yeah.
So what was interesting is I want to plug again here that President Obama speaks on American energy. He gave his speech in Largo, Maryland on March 15th. It was a few days ago. And I would encourage people to go out there and check this out because he clearly explains what's happening. He doesn't mention speculation, but we all know that's a part of it. But he kind of illustrated that with something that was very interesting, and I want people to hear me clearly with this. And you mentioned it just briefly. There's a 20% dependency on oil, or imagine that we have a 20% dependency on foreign oil. And so all of the drilling that the president is doing only covers 2% of that hole. And what he tried to illustrate was, let's say that right now we could drill in everybody's backyard. Everybody's on every corner you've seen drilling happening. That only takes us up to the 3%. We still have a 17% gap. And if you add to that that there are more countries now entering the economics of oil by saying China now is having 10 million new cars, India is having an economy that's coming up, that's going to drive more demand. And if you know anything about economics, that's going to increase the price. Okay, so if you look at the simple fact that no matter what we do here in the United States, you still have a 17% gap. That means we need to do other things. And so although Newt Gingrich's been walking around and touting this $2.50 gas, and then President Obama says it best, they're simply not telling you the truth. It can't get there. And for people to blame this particular situation on President Obama is also not informed. Again, don't take my word for it. I encourage you to go out there and listen to the speech. Listen to the facts. The president has no need to lie because they got people checking him out 24/7. You know, if they check this birth certificate out, and they're still doing it to this day, that anything he says is going to be fact checked. So I encourage you again. Look at President Obama's speech he did on American Energy out there on YouTube. You can go out there and check it out. And he did it on March 15th, which was a few days ago, and he clearly outlines the issue with gas prices. So, again, when you hear Newt Gingrich talk about this $2.50 gas, you know, you can just look at him and says, yeah, right, basically.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jima, we're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to have your final comments. And then after that, we're going to play The Road We've Traveled. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises has joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Point.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-3255. 323-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. It's been a magnificent show today. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I'd like to say thanks to all the callers. Gmo, do you have any final comments?
Well, you know, just a few. You know, we are in the middle of March Madness, and I hope it doesn't turn to May Sadness, as we have so many college athletes on display for the athletics, and yet very few of them are graduating. So that's something else we will we'll have to tackle at a later date. Breaking news, Mitt Romney just won Puerto Rico. So congratulations.
All right.
And it appears as though as we're nearing hopefully the ending for this primary season for them, that we can then really get to the substance of issues that are really affecting us on a day-to-day basis. My main thing would just to encourage people to find out, you know, what the new voting rights are in your state if you're in a primary season. Although the rules may not be in effect now, they should have informed you of something when you went to vote, if you voted in your last primary for anything. Find out what's on those local ballots, what's happening in your city, in your state. They're making changes up there in your state capital that will have a lasting impact on your life and your children's lives. And we're not paying enough attention, and they're getting away with a whole lot. So we've got to educate ourselves. We've got to read those local papers, go to the library, get that little paper there that's for free, and see what's happening in the city, see what's happening in your state. I cannot say that enough about voting. It's not that I'm pushing you to vote for one person or another, but you do not want to show up on Election Day and not be able to vote because you don't have what you're supposed to have. And it's important to note that our vote does count. Our vote is important, or they would not be doing so much to try to suppress it. So whoever tells you, oh, our vote doesn't matter, remind them, then why has 39 out of 50 states enacted new rules and new laws prohibiting people or making it more difficult for people to vote? So our votes do count, and as we move forward, just continue to stay informed about what's happening in your home state.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Gma Hill Cook. Don't forget to follow her on Twitter. And that's at AskGma. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE TalkRadio.blogspot.com. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to be playing the President's Road Travel. But now, you're listening to the sounds of George Spencer. Take us away, Joyce. All right, now, the road we've traveled by yours truly, President Obama.
What do we remember in November of 2008? Was it this moment? Or this?
This is an economy right now that can't find the bottom of bad news.
10 years of saving completely gone, vanished, poof.
Watching the Dow Industrial Average has been like watching the heart monitor on a critically ill patient.
How do we understand this president and his time in office? Do we look at the day's headlines, or do we remember what we as a country have been through?
The president-elect is here in Chicago, and he's named the members of the economic team, and they all fly in for the first big briefing on the economy. Many of the leading financial figures of the world are taking the subway in from the airport and traipsing through the snow to get to the transition office.
There was a screen set up for slides, but we might as well have been showing a horror movie, because what was described in that meeting was an economic crisis beyond anything anybody had imagined.
You had people telling you that the auto industry was literally days from collapse. The financial sector, kind of the heart that pumps blood into the economy, was frozen up and in cardiac arrest.
The 6 months surrounding January 2009 is the worst 6 months ever that we ever had in the data. It was the biggest crash of household wealth that we've ever had in the United States.
Christy Romer, the incoming head of the Council of Economic Advisors, said, "Mr. President, this will be as deep as anything we've experienced since the Great Depression, and millions of people are going to lose their jobs." Tim Geithner, the incoming Treasury Secretary, said the financial system's locked up, and, "Mr. President, it could collapse." And then Peter Orszag, the budget director, was the cleanup hitter and said, "This is going to add trillions of dollars to our debt." All I was thinking at that moment was, could we get a recount?
Not since the days of Franklin Roosevelt had so much fallen on the shoulders of one president. And when he faced his country, who looked to him for answers, he would not dwell in blame or dreamy idealism.
Our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must begin again the work of remaking America.
As president, the tough decisions that he would make would not only determine the course of the nation, they'd reveal the character of the man. The first decision, where to begin.
Which is one, which is two, which is three, which is four, which is five? Where do you start? What I love about the guy, he says, we're going to do them all. Because we've got to do them all. We don't have a choice to pick.
He acted quickly with the Recovery Act, giving help where it was most urgently needed. The country had been hemorrhaging jobs. More than 3.5 million lost in the 6 months before he took office. Middle-class jobs and economic security were vanishing. The funding would keep teachers in the classroom, cops on the street, and first responders ready. And for those who were hurting, small business incentives, tax cuts for the middle class, and job training. Building bridges, highways, and infrastructure. Laying the groundwork for a new economy and restoring the possibility of growth. But another immediate crisis confronted the president. Auto executives had asked for another bailout, and there was pressure to act.
Tonight, a top GM executive warned, without help,
the company will default. There is no plan B.
If the auto industry goes down, what happens to America's manufacturing base? What happens to jobs in America? What happens to the whole Midwest?
If you closed all these car dealerships and you killed all these auto parts suppliers, people have no earthly idea what would have happened not only to the economy but to our self-image.
You know, a lot of conventional wisdom wanted to do what Mitt Romney did. Let it go. Can't be saved. Why put good money after bad?
Everybody. Democrats, Republicans. I mean, it was overwhelming. Look at the polling number. Do not rescue the automobile industry.
The president faced a real risk either way he went. He fails to invest in the auto industry. It implodes. The economy goes further down, and blood is on his hands. The president invests, and the auto industry just can't pull it out. That's on the president's hands as well.
But he knew who it would hurt the most, and how devastating the loss of a job can be to an entire family.
My grandparents taught me that a job is about more than just a paycheck. They grew up during the Depression, so they tell me about seeing their fathers or their uncles losing jobs. Even if you've got a strong spirit, if you're out of work for a long time, it can wear you down.
He decided to intervene. But in exchange for help, the president would demand action. The Bush administration had given the car companies $13 billion, and the money was now gone.
He didn't just give the car companies the money, and he didn't give the UAW the money. He said, you guys got to work together and come up, and everybody's got to have some skin in the game here. You got to modernize the automobile industry.
So don't bet against the American worker. Don't bet against the American people. We are coming back.
Because of the tough choices the president made, the stage was set for a resurgent U.S. auto industry. And it wouldn't be the last time this president would face a crisis that others would rather avoid.
One of the most worrisome problems facing Americans these days is the cost of health care and the rate at which it has increased.
It had been an issue that both parties had struggled with for more than three generations.
This is a huge economic issue because we spend 17.5% of our income on health care. No other big, wealthy country spends more than 11.8%, and almost all of them have better results than we do.
Healthcare costs have been rising three times the rate of inflation, crushing family budgets and choking business. And he knew that he couldn't fix the economy if he didn't fix healthcare. And he wanted to bring Washington together to share the tough decisions. But he faced a fierce opposition, hostile to compromise.
It'll be a cold day in hell before he socializes my country.
After months of negotiation, it was unclear whether he could get the necessary votes. Some advised him to settle. He could still claim victory if he accepted less.
I regularly told him, look, you don't have to spill this much political blood. You won't get the health care accomplishment you're seeking, but you will have something.
But he knew from experience the cost of waiting.
When my mom got cancer, she wasn't a wealthy woman, and it pretty much drained all her resources.
She developed ovarian cancer, never really had good, consistent insurance. That's a tough thing to deal with. Watching your mother die is something that could have been prevented. I don't think he wants to see anyone go through that.
And he remembered the millions of families like his who feel the pressure of rising costs and the fear of being denied or dropped from coverage.
When you hear people saying that this isn't the right time, when you hear people more worried about the politics of it, then what's right and what's wrong, I want you to think about the millions of people all across this country who are looking for some help.
And when the votes were counted, that help would come.
The bill is passed.
Beyond the crises at home, among the toughest calls that he would make as Commander-in-Chief. He had promised to bring a responsible end to the war in Iraq and bring the troops home. It was a promise kept.
After 9 years in Iraq, all the troops are returning.
Welcome home. Welcome home. Welcome home.
And it was part of his broader plan to refocus our efforts on those that had attacked us. Intelligence reports locating Osama bin Laden were promising, but inconclusive, and there was internal debate as to what the president should do.
We sat down in the Situation Room. The entire national security apparatus was in that room. The president turns to every principal in the room, every secretary. What do you recommend I do? And they say, well, 49% chance he's there, 51. It's a close call, Mr. President. As he walked out the room, it dawned on me, he's all alone. This is his decision. If he was wrong, his presidency was done. Over.
Today, at my direction, the United States launched a targeted operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda. A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. No Americans were harmed.
They've been planning this operation for more than 8 months, but in the end it came down to a period of just 40 minutes when it could either be a major success or a disastrous failure.
A lot of people have asked, how did you feel when you first heard that it was bin Laden and he had been killed? And the truth is, I didn't have time for a lot of feelings at that point because our guys were still in that compound. And it wasn't until I knew that they were across the border, they were safe, everybody was accounted for, including the dog, that I allowed some satisfaction.
He took the harder and the more honorable path. When I saw what had happened, I thought to myself, I hope that's a call I would have made.
It was the ultimate test of leadership. A victory for our nation. And there would be many others. His satisfaction, not in Washington, but with the millions of families who would feel for the first time the security of coverage. 2.5 million young adults now have coverage. 17 million kids could no longer be denied for pre-existing conditions. He expanded drug discounts for seniors. And with the Patient's Bill of Rights, Americans no longer will see their coverage dropped or capped when illness strikes. He restored science to its rightful place. He announced historic new mileage standards that will reduce oil imports. And the country is now on track to double production from renewables. Raising expectations in our schools with higher standards in 46 states. He reformed the student loan system, shifting billions in subsidies from banks and middlemen to millions of young Americans. Cracking down on credit card companies and mortgage lenders so the American people would never have to bail out Wall Street again. And when Washington stalled, he would take action, protecting everyday Americans from predatory lenders.
And I'm not going to stand by while a minority in the Senate puts party ideology ahead of the people that we were elected to serve. Not at this make or break moment for middle class Americans.
They changed the way the world sees us. And brought fairness to soldiers who want to serve their country regardless of who they love.
Thank you. Yes, we did.
and a landmark law so that a woman who does the same job as a man can get the same pay.
We will make sure that our daughters have the same rights, the same chances, and the same freedoms to pursue their dreams as our sons.
Judge Sotomayor, are you prepared to take the oath?
I am.
He placed two experienced jurists on the Supreme Court. And while the economic crisis proved to be more severe than experts had predicted, month by month, there was progress. Over 3.5 million private sector jobs in 2 years. And welcome news from Detroit.
It is a banner day for the resurgent U.S. auto industry. Less than 2 years after coming out of bankruptcy, General Motors announced today it is investing $2 billion in 17 plants.
With business booming, they repaid their loans.
Tonight, General Motors is once again number one in sales worldwide.
Time and time again, we would see rewards from tough decisions he had made. Not for quick political gain, but for long-term and enduring change. So when we remember this moment and consider this president, then and now, let's remember how far we've come and look forward to the work still to be done.
As I always say, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. God bless you and good night.